I think subscription is only going to continue to increase. Amazon Prime was kind of like the Trojan horse.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of Up Next in Commerce, the top podcast for e-commerce insights, where we get to hear from executives leading the charge at the most innovative Fortune 500 companies, the fastest growing startups today, and everything in between. I'm Stephanie Postles, CEO of Mission.org, and today I'm talking to Drew Himmel, the founder and CEO of Consult PCR. We got to discuss all the basic mistakes that e-com brands still make today, even in this day and age, with all the information we have telling us exactly what to do. Plus some ideas on how to actually implement some of the small fixes to improve your businesses that are often ignored in favor of the shiny new object. And those tips have helped brands that you know, like Mudwater, Halo Sport, and more, focus on what really matters, improve retention, reduce churn, build resiliency, so you'll definitely want to take notes. Let's get into it. What are business leaders thinking about when they aren't winning at business? Family, travel, the latest TV show? Yes, and maybe. But how about quirky business opportunities or little discussed financial trends or maybe even plant medicine benefits and alternative wellness? Mission Daily is back, baby, and our flagship podcast is better than ever. Mission Daily is the podcast for the business builder, the thoughtful marketer, the team manager, the blue-collar worker looking for new ways to think about life, finances, and health. This is for the people who want to break the status quo and laugh a little or a lot along the way. Join me, Stephanie Postles, and my co-host, Albert Chow, as we address the subjects, thoughts, and trends that business leaders think about but don't often talk about. Tune into Mission Daily wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you there. Drew, welcome to the show.
Hey, Steph. Yeah, great to be here.
Glad to have you. So, you have a very interesting background, which is why you're here, as you know. You have this beautiful blend of like an intersection of digital strategy and investing and kind of seeing the future, which is why I wanted you to come on the show, because I'm like, that's interesting. Usually I hear about one or the other, but never the two. So I first want to kind of go back to, you know, where did your interests come from when it comes to digital and when it comes to investing?
Well, the interest in digital came at a early age. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. My dad was a serial entrepreneur. And it was in 2007, internet was obviously a thing and more businesses were coming online. And it was an easy way for me to leverage my youth with starting my own business. I read SEO for Dummies, version 2, taught myself.
That's a good book.
and taught myself how to build websites and created a business card and kind of worked out of my living room. I did have to have on the card account executive because I grew up in more of a conservative town. So because I was young, they're a little nervous giving their money to a 23-year-old to help them with digital marketing. So I'd always come back and say, oh, let me check that with my boss and let me clear, make sure everything looks okay. And have the conversation with myself and then come back to them and say, yeah, that sounds good.
Oh my gosh. Was this a one-man show back in the day? Like, were you by yourself doing that? Or did you start having like a team working with you?
Oh, no. I was, you know, I still remember I was joking about it actually this morning over coffee with a friend. And I was meeting with my accountant about taxes and other things. He's like, all right, well, let me see what your, you know, P&L looks like. And I look at him and go, I have no idea what a P&L is. So it was trial by fire for sure. I got my undergrad and MBA, shortly there. And yeah, I think my first website took me 13 months to build, and now we can turn it around in a few days, it seems like. So a lot of lessons learned along the way, but I was happy just to kind of be on my own and control my own destiny. And it was fun. You know, you're learning constantly that's still why I love it, is you have to stay up to date. It's changing, on a daily basis, it seems like. So the passion from digital was, it just kind of made sense at the right time. And yeah, now I'm kind of long-haired, you know, long gray hair with 15 years of experience, running my own shop.
Yep. And so you've run your own shop twice, right? Because I saw in the beginning you had one business and you were working with brands, I think like Lyft and I think it was NBA, MLB. I'm trying to remember all the big names where I was just like, yeah. Oh, wow, these are a big deal. And then now you have another one, which is still working with, it seems like more fast growth, like you know, companies like Mudwater, which everyone knows, you know, how fast they scaled and grew.
Yeah.
So tell me about Y2, what happened and how did it start and where's it at now?
Yeah, so I've had the digital agency for forever. And you know, honestly, I think a great strength of an entrepreneur and sometimes a terrible weakness is shiny object syndrome and getting exposed to new ideas and wanting always to experiment and having a high risk tolerance. And so I had a friend at the time that the business was doing really well. We had steady growth on the digital side. And he really came to me and was like, look, I have all these connections and relationships, but I've never run a business before. And, you know, I grew up in a, you know, relatively small town in Jacksonville, Florida. You know, most of my businesses were local, you know, air conditioning contractors or, you know, what have you. So we joined forces and it was a rocket ship in a lot of ways, where we would still send business to the digital agency. But the whole idea was, how do we connect all these relationships and drive earned media for businesses? So our first client was Standing Rock in the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. So, you know, we put on events at Robert Redford's restaurant in Sundance with Shailene Woodley and a bunch of really large brands and influencers, Black Eyed Peas.
Wow.
And then we also worked with Lyft to help them with, like, you know, it was right at that time when Trump was enacting a lot of his immigration reform and policies. So we would do a lot of campaigns connecting them with, like, various influencers and campaigns to drive awareness, because they, you know, they donated $1 million to ACLU right off the bat because a lot of their drivers were immigrants. And so it was just really fun. And, you know, we helped the Chargers, the NFL team, move from San Diego to LA, doing, you know, brand partnerships, community development. And, you know, it grew to 12 people from all kinds of background, from IBM to GoPro to Pandora. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it was that lack of focus where I was getting pulled in two different directions. So I sold my stake in that consultancy and came back about 2.5 years ago to focus on the agency that luckily had been running the whole time and wanted to grow that. And now we've since then had that focus on, yeah, like you said, high growth consumer brands, really helping them drive a lot more value on the e-commerce side of the business. And luckily, it was the right timing, you know, there as well, where a lot more businesses were coming online, you know, due to the pandemic and less, you know, shopping in retail. And we were able to position ourselves really well to be able to help accelerate some of that growth for a lot of the brands we work with.
That's awesome. Okay. So when you onboard a new brand today, what are some of maybe like the audits that you go through? I'm thinking about, you know, like the Mudwaters, when they come to you, what do you be like, what kind of instant value you're providing them? Because I'm thinking about everyone listening. They're like, okay, how can Drew help me right now, even if I'm not working with him? So like, what are some things that you do right from the start when a brand comes in where you're like, this is wrong. Here's how to do it. Like, give me some behind the scenes.
So I think, first of all, you know, there's usually, it's a double-edged sword sometimes with agencies. You know, I think a lot of people have had bad taste and they are a little hesitant to say, okay, you know, we would maybe prefer to have this in-house. And so what we want to immediately do is be able to figure out the low-hanging fruit that exists that we can start driving, you know, value for the brand so that we can get the singles on the board that can turn in the triples and the home runs, you know. And so what we'll do, and I think our focus is a little unique, we don't spend time on your creative, your paid media, anything of that accord. It's really looking at your website and your own assets. So that's your website, your email, and your SMS. And we identify, like, where's a lot of low-hanging fruit. We've worked with now 50-plus brands in the e-commerce space, looked at millions and millions of visitors of traffic, you know, millions of people of in terms of database and customers. And on the website, there's just a lot of things that, for whatever reason, people don't focus on as much. They focus so much on the creative and the ads and where they're spending, you know, kind of their dollars. But for us, we're like, if you could take care of that and have a really solid foundation and a home that you're sending everybody to, it's only going to improve your cost of acquisition across the board for SEO, social media, and the various channels. And so there's a lot of these that exist that I like to talk about. And I think for us, it's like you're dealing with people with the attention level of about a second grader. So you really want to remove friction, make it as easy as possible. And how do you do that? So if you have a lot of products, a search bar, you know, right there, making it a little bit more prominent as opposed to the magnifying glass, have search in the words, we've shown have a huge increase in terms of the amount of traffic. it gets 3 to 5x the conversion of almost any other page on your site. And so making it really prominent right there on the main navigation is something that you could do today. It doesn't take much development and code. And I can almost guarantee you, I'm not in the business of guarantees, but you will see a lift in terms of overall conversion just by that quick little fix right there. Another one that always comes to mind is not treating all your traffic the same. You know, some you might have a lot of returning, you know, customers. In the case of Mudwater, it's a heavy subscription-based product. That's where 80-90% of the revenue comes from. And so you don't need to tell the brand story necessarily. You want to be able to find easy entry paths for them to do what you want them to do, which is, you know, kind of repurchase the product. And so having on your homepage with the products and having it add to cart where it's like a one-click kind of checkout versus what I see brands make a lot of mistakes is they might have the best sellers. You click on it, you go to a product page, and then you add it to the cart. Well, taking out that one extra step can make a pretty meaningful difference depending on how much traffic you have and what that looks like. And so and the third I'll kind of leave with on the website is site speed increasingly is coming up all the time. Having it where the compression on your images is easy to load on the site so that it decreases the amount of time that it takes to load to see, you know, everything that's you have to offer, whether it be the content, the images, or the products, is something where like a lazy load is an easy install. As you're scrolling down the site, you can have these pictures only populate once they're on the page itself or on that specific portion of the page. So those are like really simple things where I think the stat everybody throws around, like every extra second your site takes to load, it decreases your conversion by 10%. So if you can focus on that and find some really easy ways to be able to like reduce friction, make it easy to find out, you know, the products or what they're looking for, and then for the site itself and the content to be accessible as quickly as possible, you will start to see some pretty meaningful gains in terms of conversion, which is going to affect profitability, revenue, and everything else too.
Yeah, it's interesting because those things sound so obvious, but then I'm like, so many brands don't have that even to today, which I'm like, why? I mean, if you were to go and read like, how to increase conversions, some of those things would definitely be on there. Site speed, of course, but I mean,
yeah,
I don't see everyone kind of tapping into that for some reason. Any thoughts on why maybe basic principles like that aren't being covered?
I don't know. I always say I'm like in the unsexy part of the business. Like I don't touch influencers or creative or the brand, which most brand owners, that's what they like to talk about. They'll agonize over what image or this font or this choice, but the technical details, they might get lost in it and they just don't put themselves in the mind of the consumer. They get so closely related to the brand and what they're seeing because they live it day in and day out. And so that's why I always encourage a lot of brands to install like heat map tracking so you can have like the qualitative data be able to back that up. But yeah, I think it's one, they're a little too close to the brand and they don't look at these like simple things just because they it gets neglected or overlooked. And two, it just really isn't appealing or enticing, you know, kind of part of the business, even though it makes a huge difference in terms of like overall revenue and profitability too. So I think we are increasingly see this come up more and more with like the iOS updates and costs for acquiring customers on Facebook and other channels becoming increasingly challenging. It's like, well, what do we actually have control over? Well, we can always control the site and make changes there, you know, change, you know, things with email as well. So I do think it's becoming more and more. We're getting a lot more inbound leads and referrals than we have in years past. I think due to, you know, it's been increasingly difficult to acquire customers in the way that it was even just a few years ago, too.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you actually about the, you know, changes that are happening, not just around consumer trends changing and how people are buying and, you know, what they're even interested in this year, but also around the privacy changes, like you mentioned the iOS update. I mean, what are you like, how are you viewing this coming year when it comes to everything digital? Because when thinking about, you know, emails, it's like, okay, open rates don't matter anymore. Okay, you need to have different metrics and all these new things seem like they're changing, but I haven't heard enough, you know, actionable advice on like, here's how to maybe tackle these five big things or something. So what are you seeing in this world right now?
I mean, I'm obviously incredibly biased. All we focus on is conversion and retention. And so, you know, the ability for brands to acquire customers as cheaply as they can and to be able to keep and maintain those relationships for as long as they can. And so that is very topical because it is becoming more and more difficult. There's more brands coming online every single day. Amazon is eating, you know, more and more of the market share, you know, kind of across the board. And so it's not just one thing to, you know, look at the unit economics and what does it cost to acquire one customer. But, and that's really where Mudwire kind of came in. I was like, okay, we're experiencing some churn from month one to month three. Like what tips, tactics, strategies can we employ so that they stay as long as, you know, kind of possible? And I think we're seeing an overinvestment of dollars, resources, and strategy is a lot around, you know, kind of retention and building community and not thinking about it as like, oh, what's the latest loyalty program that we can, you know, kind of employ. And I think brands that really nail this and do it effectively are positioning themselves long term to build more of a resilient business, where a few years ago, as an investor, you know, I was seeing a lot of this firsthand. You know, they were raising at crazy valuations, even pre-revenue, just based on like, hey, here's the idea, and we can go and acquire customers on Facebook, and we can be able to do this, and it's going to be a repeatable thing. But that's not the case anymore. So it's like, what are the strategies that you can do to make sure that you're building a really solid foundation where it's a profitable growth model, and you're not just throwing dollars and dollars and dollars, you know, kind of after acquiring customers? Easy ways to do that. I think subscription is only going to continue to increase. Amazon Prime was kind of like the Trojan horse. And I think people are becoming so comfortable now with getting items that you would normally, you know, go to the grocery store or go to the, you know, kind of the supermarket to be able to buy. I have probably, and maybe because I'm in the business, I'm a little over indexed, but I have 10 plus subscriptions at this point. I get, you know, my Element electric packets. I get my Cometeer coffee, my blood water, you know, kind of delivered Olipop as like a functional beverage, to toilet paper, to, you know, toothpaste. And so what's nice about that is you keep them and you have a lot of like data and you can start to reward that loyalty. And with Mudwater, that was one where they were treating all the customers the same. Someone that bought a product one time versus they bought it for every month for 3 years in a row. How do you start that surprise and delight? Like, how do we start thinking about rewarding them and giving them, you know, maybe a free creamer, you know, or a free product, or having them actually, what's coming up a lot that I see been really successful is private Slack communities, private Facebook groups, where they can actually tell them like product ideation and starting to kind of like format that with exclusive content. If you can start to position it where, you know, who does this better than anybody? It's the airlines, where they really like, they got their point system, they reward you with upgrades, you know, special perks, discounts, things of that nature. And that's, you know, for these airlines, you know, the stats around Delta, that's a third of their business is from, you know, the loyalty and the valuation. So they've obviously spent a lot of money and dollars, you know, doing that in the same way that Amazon has with their Prime program. How do, you know, smaller, up and coming, growing D2C brands hope to replicate that by thinking about different strategies that they can employ? And I think Olipop's actually a great example of someone that is a customer-centric organization that thinks about, you know, how can they surprise, how can they delight, you know, every single customer, but also these, you know, really loyal, you know, kind of customers that they have as well.
Yeah, we had Olipop join the show, I think a few months back, and almost the whole conversation was around how do you surprise your customers and what are like little ways that you can do that. So yeah, that was a good interview. For anyone who hasn't seen it, go check it out. So, okay, I want to go back to, only because I know Mudwater, because I, you know, was a customer of theirs for a while. I want to know, you know, what were they doing when they came to you? And then what did they start doing? Because it's one thing to be like, oh, this customer, Stephanie's been around for a year and we need to reward her, and definitely understand that piece. But from the 1 to 3 month mark, that is the hardest point where I feel like I was like, oh, I like it, but should I keep it? And like, that's like the shakiest period. So what did you all do when they came to you and were like, we need help in this like 3 month period of retention?
Yeah. Well, I could take absolutely no credit for the brand or the product.
Yeah, it's
Shane
great.
And
yeah,
the team there, they've done an incredible job. So it's like a home run for us. But what we found, there's a proliferation of all these apps and ways that you can communicate with your customer, which is great. But the downside of that is there's all these apps and there's all these different ways that you can communicate with the customer, because it becomes a little overwhelming. And so in the case of Mud, they had 8 different tools and systems communicating with Stephanie, the customer. There's no consolidation. You could have gotten 8 messages before you actually got the shipment delivered to your house. And so the brand experience and the onboarding of that product, we felt like was very disjointed, to be able to like mitigate any of the friction and almost introduce some friction there. So what we did was we took a look at it. And then we said, hey, let's consolidate everything into Klaviyo, you know, SMS, shipping notifications, the transactional emails that were going through Shopify, and really think about, for that first time customer, we took a lot of qualitative data from like surveys of like, why were people canceling and what was going on? And what we found was, it was such a unique product that it's not just, you know, making a pot of coffee. And so we onboarded a platform that integrates great with Klaviyo called Malomo. And what that helps, instead of taking, hey, your shipment's on the way, it builds these beautifully designed and branded emails and say, hey, you know, build a little bit of buzz and excitement. But here's our common recipes and unboxing videos and things like that to accompany the shipping notification. So taking something that's like a stale, very static, you know, usually it's like HTML written, no design, turning it into more of like a branded, beautiful experience, I think really started to get ahead of some of these objections that were, you know, kind of happening that we noticed by analyzing the survey data. And then two, the common reason why they were getting cancellations was, I have too much of the product or I'm not using it enough. And so what we did through Recharge, the subscription platform, is we launched Recharge SMS, integrated that with Klaviyo. And it sounds counterintuitive, but we actually gave people an option. We would let them know, hey, you know, we're fulfilling your order. Your shipment's on the way. It's going to be delivered on this date. Do you need to pause? Do you want to gift this? You know, do you want to pause for a week, you know, a month? And what Recharge actually found was brands that offered this as an option reduced churn by as high as like 20 to 30% by giving them that, you know, optionality. So you don't feel like you're in the, you know, the old school days of like a gym membership where you, I feel like you had to go get your mom's like written approval, you know, get a blood sample just to be able to cancel, you know, the gym membership and have to do it in person. Customers want optionality. They want to be able to feel like they're in control. They don't want to feel like they're locked into some 2-year contract or, you know, kind of agreement that they can't get out of. So those were like two core things that we were able to introduce, was like the consolidation of the communication, the onboarding experience. And then two, just giving that optionality with common reasons where, you know, I don't want 5 boxes of mud water that I'm not actually using sitting on my pantry shelf. And those two things alone made a dramatic impact, you know, in terms of reduction in churn, increase of lifetime value and things of that nature.
Hey there, are you enjoying the show so far? Well, imagine your company's advertising placed right in this very spot during a future interview with another elite e-commerce mind. Imagine your messaging and logo directly connected to the industry's most prominent innovators and thought leaders, distributed across every major podcast platform and social network. Yeah, well, it's time to stop imagining. Learn how you can partner with UpNext in Commerce and sponsor this very show. Reach out to me at stephanie@mission.org and let's have a conversation. So it reminds me of, there's this water company that's super bougie and everyone can make fun of me for using this water company, but it's called Alive Water and they ship you spring water in a glass container. I wanted to support it because the person here, I think they're maybe from Austin or I don't know. I heard about it in the Austin community. And every week they send me a text. A wonderful lady named Christine is like, hey, Stephanie, do you want your delivery of Alive Water? And some weeks I say yes. And then most I say no because I don't need it. And I'm like, I don't know if they're making this too easy, but that is my new standard. I want a Christina texting me every week, making sure that I actually need this water. And if I don't, she's like, no worries. Yeah. I'll talk to you next week. I'm like, bye. Yeah. So it's like the best experience. And it's a good reminder that when it comes to these like subscription products these days, it can't be like how it started back in the day where it like locked you in, or even how it was maybe like 6 months ago, where it's still like, you know, you had to kind of commit to a time frame. It's very much like customers want it when they want it. And if they want to pause it, they do, but they'll probably stay as long as you don't make it too strict. Because if she would have said no, or if they would have been like, you get it every 2 weeks, whether you want it or not, I would have probably gone in and canceled and then forgot and then maybe came back in a year or so. So it's all about, yeah, optionality these days.
Yeah, I think it's important because you're playing the long game and you're trying to build, you know, a relationship, and it's that personal touch and all those things that you mentioned too that I think make a huge difference. But there's a couple of products that I've subscribed to in the past where I have to like, you know, go 3 separate steps, get into my login page, and then they make me call, or I've, you know, the gym membership comes to mind. You have to like fax something in or mail in a cancellation, print it out. It's just like, you know, that one experience. Yeah, maybe you're making it harder so you keep them a month longer or something like that, but it's going to end up biting you in the long run. And I think, yeah, with so many brands coming online, there's only going to be more competitors and things like that. And if you can't compete always on price, you can, I think, compete on experience. And prioritizing that makes a huge, you know, kind of difference, I think, in the customer's mind.
Yeah. Okay. What keeps you up at night? I mean, you get to see a lot of behind the scenes on some really cool brands. Like, what are things that kind of have you worried where you're like, I'm looking for options for this. I'm digging deep into this world. Like, what are you thinking about?
Yeah. I mean, right or wrong, I chose a business that is constantly evolving and changing. The products that we are offering, the services that we are providing, I mean, I could say 15 years ago, but even a year ago has you know, kind of changed. And I think I'm a very big believer in like more of the specialist mindset, because that's the only way we can keep up with everything. If we were full service and we were trying to understand your Amazon business and your paid social, even paid social, it's like the rise of TikTok and the nuance, you know, kind of within that versus Facebook versus, you know, kind of YouTube. And so, you know, the business is going to constantly change. You know, for us, Apple makes their update and yeah, we don't see open rates anymore. So it's like, what are we doing fundamentally to be able to mitigate that risk and kind of the changes? And then, you know, the things that keep me up are unfortunately a lot of the things I can't control. Like, who knew that this deadly, you know, pandemic was going to happen a couple of years ago? And I remember having like an all hands meeting and just saying, hey, here's what we're doing. This is how we're preparing. We were a fully, you know, in an office every single day for 13 of the 15 years. We have not stepped foot back in that office in 2 years, you know, amidst all these, like, you know, with what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. It's like, there's just so much that we leave a deadly pandemic, and then we're going into, you know, potential war. It's like all these things that obviously keep me up at night, that I'm trying to do what's best for my team and really, you know, care a lot about them to make sure that they feel heard. And we have to build resiliency in our business. And so, you know, for me, it's mitigating any kind of like risk with like over leveraging ourselves, like building a business that makes sense, that can be here for years to come, and continually educating ourselves on what's ahead. I think my team gets a little overwhelmed. I mean, I was pushing Klaviyo and e-commerce like 2.5 years ago, and they're like, Drew, we're doing HubSpot and this, like, we don't need to look at these other, you know, kind of items. And you have to be willing to, you know, experiment and try new things. And some of them are going to fail, and you got to be willing to face that as a leader of the organization. And I think that's what our clients are looking for. You know, we can't be doing checklist work, the same thing that we've been doing. You know, we have to be innovating. We have to be experimenting and just being really forthright with them of like, hey, all these strategies, some of them might not work, and we understand that, but are you willing to kind of go on this journey with us together and trust and respect that we have your best interest at heart, and that we are educating ourselves to understand what's going on and what the dynamics of being a digitally native brand, you know, kind of means, and trying to build, you know, resiliency for them as well.
Yep. So what are you pushing the edge on right now? What are you convincing your team is the next big thing to try or experimenting with that maybe would be a bit contrarian, or other even e-commerce brands or, you know, digital agencies would be like, yeah, that's not smart, Drew.
I've taken some crazy flyers personally in my investments, and everything from like crypto to colonizing Mars with like SpaceX.
Yeah, and, well, we'll talk about that. Don't you worry.
And, you know, meditation 6 years ago when everyone's like, yeah, no one meditates. What are you doing? So, you know, I've always had a high risk tolerance, you know, kind of within that. I think one example is my head of UX. We hired her a little over a year ago. She was at Victoria's Secret for a decade. And I just like, she's a perfect fit. At the time, we did no CRO, no UX. I didn't even really know what merchandising strategy meant, but I just believed in her. And I was like, look, this is a great accompaniment to all the retention work that we did. It was a huge risk at the time. And so I think we're looking at ways that we can continue to push the envelope. Increasingly, even like email marketing, we don't really do. We've turned away a lot of business where it's like copywriting and design. We're looking at more like, what does it mean in the app ecosystem, and understand the broader like segmentation strategy, be able to leverage data analytics to be able to tell that story, and how our technology is going to impact that. So one that I think is a buzzy word that a lot of people are talking about now is like crypto and NFTs. I think it's here to stay, both as a individual investor and some of the, and we do have some clients, you know, kind of in the space that are NFT marketplaces and things like that. But broadly, the application, you know, there's a lot of scams out there. There's a lot of stuff that's going to end up going to zero, 90%+ in my opinion. But if you think of the thesis where, again, what we talked about at the top of like, how do brands, you know, kind of prepare themselves for these changes to Facebook and higher costs for acquiring customers, you can't really reward those. There's like the crowdfunding, you know, kind of platforms where maybe they donate and they get a, you know, kind of some cool perks. There's like loyalty and VIP. But what I think in the next few years, NFT is going to allow a customer to own a physical aspect of the brand or the business that they most admire. And I do believe there's going to be rewards and mechanisms in place leveraging blockchain and technology to, you know, if they're referring a lot of their friends and customers, they're posting on social media, they're engaging on every single email, they're clicking on, you know, kind of every link, they're purchasing every new product that comes out. Those should be rewarded. And I think through, you know, the NFTs, that's giving them a tangible asset and a way to be able to do that. I think right now I'm still saying, hey, let some of these larger brands where you see like, you know, Dior and Gucci and Adidas getting into the metaverse and things like that. Like, you know, they have 15, 20 person teams, you know, millions and millions of dollars to be able to dedicate to this. Let them kind of like figure out, be the trailblazer, but I don't think we can ignore it. And there's the payment implications and the, you know, the DeFi and everything that's going on there. But the use cases are, I think, to reward your most loyal customers in very technologically advanced ways that just don't, you know, currently exist in apps or, you know, kind of any ecosystem. So I'm personally very excited about it. I can even feel myself getting energized thinking about it and talking about it. I've invested in a lot of projects, but I think it's here to stay. And I think it's something that we're going to continue to push the envelope as we think about broader like retention strategies and, you know, customer stickiness and things like that for the brands we work with.
Yeah, it reminds me of this, I forget what blog post this was, but it was all around the bundling and unbundling of things. And you think about what you were talking about, like, is my customer sharing on social and here right now, it's all very like, in one vertical, like you can measure people's maybe social shares and you can measure separately newsletter shares and you can like a referral thing. They're all very different. And to me, this technology will bring in a capability to bundle it all together so that you can see that cross-platform view that you haven't had in the past, which is what's happened with a lot of technology in different ways. But I'm like, it's clearly going to happen here too, because it's very disjointed how they measure, you know, even referrals right now at this point still feel very all over the place.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, you look at Brave, which has raised a ton of money as like a browser where they're actually paying you for your attention to be able to engage with these ads and everything else. Well, that is giving, you know, you're not getting that same information in the way that you have with like first party data or third party data. So I think there's going to be more and more applications where identity and privacy is going to continue to be a big topic. We have to think about technology and the impact that that's going to have. And so, you know, we have to have a pulse on it. It's going to keep, you know, kind of rapidly evolving. And again, I'm very long on it. I think there's a lot of projects that are incredibly speculative, but, you know, fundamentally just, it makes sense to me, you know, as a business owner.
Yeah. I was just talking to the co-founder of Square, Jim, and he's starting a whole company called Invisibly that is basically around rewarding users for giving up data. But, you know, it's very much like, it's kind of remind me of Brave in a way, but much more when it comes to like journalism and how they're getting paid and how consumers are getting paid. And it seems like a lot of people are kind of headed in that direction right now, and someone will be successful. Like who it is, who knows, but definitely seems like that's what consumers are wanting even more now that they're understanding what they are giving up and whether they want to choose to do that or not. So then brands have to figure out how to play in a whole different world than what they've been used to, you know, over the past decade or more.
Yeah. There's too many smart people getting into the space to ignore at this point. So yeah, 100% agree.
Okay, so I want to hear about your world of investing, because you know that was why I first was like, Drew, hop on a call with me. Tell me more about you. You, I think, were a seed investor. So you did space with SpaceX. So you're interested in colonizing Mars. You, like you said, meditation before it was cool. So with the Calm app. Psychedelics, I think, with Mind Bloom, which, you know, maybe for some is still contrarian. Yeah. Not for me. I think it's great. Tell me how you even got into this space and what got you most excited in, you know, being like an early investor in companies that are very early.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. Like I said, my dad was talking to me about, you know, employee management at the dinner table in high school. I knew deep down it was something that I always wanted to do. I have two younger brothers that are also entrepreneurs. So I just love the energy and the hunger at an early stage. And I'm fortunate enough as an agency owner to be able to work with, like, you know, my business development lately is like, what are the brands that I love and I want to work with? Like a Mudwater. We worked with this blood glucose monitoring called Super Sapiens that raised a bunch of money. And I was like, Who do I know that's connected to them after reading a Packy McCormick newsletter?
Oh, he's so great.
Yeah. Got connected to a mutual friend, Kat Cole, who knew the founder. And, you know, then we started working with them and helping. And so I like industries that kind of push the envelope. I like working with, you know, the entrepreneurs as they're discovering. Luckily, I've built a skill set that they need around like the digital marketing and strategy. And then, you know, the capital along with, you know, my network. And so, you know, I'm never going to sell my agency for a crazy multiple or, you know, a SaaS exit or what you see in, you know, other industries, but it is a cash flow positive business. You know, I never raised outside funding. My first client, I think, paid me $150 a month. I was, you know, I was off to the races from there and profitable every day since. And so within that, I've lived a pretty simple life. I want to invest in things and I never was really that passionate about real estate or things of that nature, but what could I actually have a control over the outcome? And so, yeah, you know, kind of early on wrote my first, you know, kind of angel check and yeah, was calm. I met, you know, Michael and Alex, the co-founders through an organization called Summit Series at Summit at Sea. And, you know, at the time, I think there were seven people, but profitable and growing and meditation was something I was experimenting with. And unfortunately, they didn't let me write a big check, but was still able to get an allocation in their friends and family round. And that paid off. And I was like, wow, this is fun. And then SpaceX was the next one. And yeah, like you mentioned Mindbloom, Spark Grills, which is a really cool electric charcoal grill that's got a bunch of big investors kind of behind it and growing pretty rapidly. You know, honestly, as fun as it is, it became a little bit of a bandwidth constraint. So I ended up LPing or investing in two separate funds where they can handle all the deal flow, due diligence, and I can do capital, you know, put in the capital and do some, you know, SPVs if I really believe in the brand. So I carve out a small like special project vehicle and carve out a round if I really believe in the brand and the founder and what they're building and bring some of my friends into, you know, these different deals. And through AngelList, it's all kind of handled. So it's definitely scratches the itch for me. I just love like, how are you going to solve these problems? You know, thinking collaboratively with the entrepreneur and how they're tackling it. And yeah, just trying to find ways that I can add value and be, you know, kind of helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I also just think it's such a nice blend, like I said, kind of in the beginning of being able to see what's on the cutting edge, what are people trying to do? And then how do you bring that knowledge back into your agency? Because you've kind of get a glimpse into the future quite often and already know what kind of problems they might be encountering and then be able to solve them. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. And it's, you know, looking under the hood in terms of like the unit economics around how they're acquiring customers, going into Google Analytics and things like that to be able to, you know, tell the story if this is sustainable or not. I've, you know, as an LP in a few funds, I've definitely told them to not walk, but run away from certain investments. Cause I just like, look, this isn't, yeah, their top line is growing, but you know, if you're spending $5 to acquire a customer that's paying you a dollar, this doesn't really match up and make a lot of sense. And so honestly, the thing I love to do more than anything is connect people. I don't have an agenda. It's like, you're really, really smart doing some interesting things. You're smart. I think you guys can, you know, kind of help each other. And I don't know, it just gives me a lot of joy to be able to like connect the dots as an investor, advisor, or even, you know, with the clients that we work with as well on the agency side.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Last question. What would you be doing or what industry would you be working in if you weren't doing what you're doing now? What would you choose to do? And it can't be another digital agency or anything you've done before. It has to be something different than that. It can't be investing outside of those things.
Well, so I will answer it. I promise. The thing that is cool about the agency is we can kind of pick the client. So I get exposure to these industries. Like we just started working with this brand called Happy that uses magnetic frequency to change your state, focus, sleep.
We had Scott on the show.
Oh, did you really? Oh, yeah. So we just started working with them, you know, kind of recently. And it's so things that I'm like a mudwater. We worked with this guy, Dr. Joe Dispenza, who's in the mindfulness space. It's like, I feel like I'm a kid in a candy store because it's like, these are all products that I want. I get, sometimes I'll get trade. I'm like, yeah, I'll take a spark grill and I'll grill outside and use that or, you know, mindfulness or, you know, kind of what have you. So that part I do love. I know I naturally as an entrepreneur have ADD and I just get exposure to so many different things and industries. So, but to kind of answer your question, I really, and that's why I think Elon Musk and what he was doing at Tesla and SpaceX and now Neuralink, and he just set out to solve like really, really challenging problems. And so one of those like portfolio, you know, companies of like a Tesla or a SpaceX to wake up every day and say that you're reducing carbon emissions through electric vehicles, or you're colonizing, you know, kind of Mars, or, you know, even what Starlink, which is his Wi-Fi that spun out of SpaceX, like the Ukrainian, I think, vice president tweeted at him saying like, hey, can you help us get Wi-Fi? The very next day, they had delivered the Starlink satellites to be able to help them so that Russia couldn't reduce comms. I'm like,
wow,
you're doing some pretty amazing, you know, stuff to be able to like, not just, you know, and that's where I think I get really excited is what are some of the big problems that we're faced with as a species and in some ways. And so climate change, you know, different things like that is where I get really lit up. And so I'm also pushing our agency, like, how do we do more of that type of stuff? Because you feel like you're not only just helping people, but you're helping, you know, so many different things and kind of like aspects. So it becomes a lot more easy to get behind, you know, as the clients that we work with. But if I didn't have the agency, it'd be doing, you know, I think I've always loved sales. So if I could combine sales and climate change in some way, I don't really know how those go together, but
they might. They could.
I would be, I think, pretty excited.
Yeah, that's great. That's a cool answer. And yeah, also just awesome hearing about, you know, your thoughts on supporting initiatives and companies and the people who are really changing the world, because that's, you know, just as helpful. So Drew, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm glad we made time and had you on. Really fun conversation. Where can people learn more about you and maybe get in touch?
Yeah, consultpcr.com is the website. I do like a weekly newsletter. It's kind of in the similar vein of like a Tim Ferriss 5-Bullet Friday. Might take a minute to digest. We have like different tips, tricks, brands that I'm seeing, investments that I made. But yeah, it doesn't take very long. So check it out. You can subscribe, you know, come on the site. And then, you know, Twitter and LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn, you know, you can find me by Drew Hemmel or same on Twitter. So Twitter, I'm more of like the stalker. I just read a lot of content, but I don't really post. LinkedIn, I'm a little more active and kind of posting. So
awesome. Thanks, Drew.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Hey listeners, thanks for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. It helps spread the word, and I would greatly appreciate it. See you next time. Thank you for checking out another epic hour of business insights and inspiration on the Up Next in Commerce podcast. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in partnering with us to bring your brand to a growing audience of e-commerce experts, reach out to me at stephanie@mission.org to get the conversation started.